Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 155. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, a new champion has been crowned.
Yes, crowned this very evening.
Stanley Cup Finals are over.
Over.
And it's the Boston Bruins, dude.
Right. Shocker.
They win a 4-0 game in Vancouver. The streets of Vancouver aflame as people are turning over cars and lighting them on fire.
Stay classy, Vancouver.
What happened to the peaceful, docile Canadian reputation?
What happened to the drinking yourself into a coma solution to a Game 7 loss?
Seems perfectly logical to me. I feel like that's what would have happened on our end.
Yeah,
I certainly wouldn't be outside the Campbell Library, you know, lighting it on fire if the Sharks lost a game.
I saw a picture of fans looting Louis Vuitton stores. That seems appropriate. Not really.
What happens? What possesses? Now, of course, I don't think we're talking about the average run-of-the-mill fan here.
Right.
Are these shameful bandwagon fans that now have lost their mind, dude? Or, like, what happens? What makes a person decide to take their team's loss out on the community?
Well, you know, not to get into too long of a digression here, but I read a book once called Among the Thugs by Bill Buford that talks about
soccer hooliganism.
Talks about soccer hooliganism and sort of the culture of this mob mentality that overcomes people, and they just sort of crave violence, and it becomes less about an individual's desire or want or whatever, and it goes down to sort of the basest impulses of people. And I think that's sort of what happened. I might put a link to that book on the blog or something, because it's actually a really cool book. It was written in the 80s, but this guy sort of gets himself into some of these football supporters, as they're known, and participates in some of these riots that, you know, include massive fights with fans from other teams and just destruction of the surrounding area. So yeah, I just think it goes down to the basest human impulses. But let's kind of get off the rioting thing and talk a little bit more about the game, shall we?
Sorry, I digress. I know when the podcast goes poorly, I go home and I punch my cat in the face.
Yeah, right.
That's usually what happens.
Yeah. I overturn the coffee table.
Yeah. All right, dude. We'll focus on the game.
Well, in the series as a whole, and to be perfectly honest, I was pretty disappointed in the game, and I was pretty disappointed in the series as a whole. I was hoping for a close Game 7. I love Game 7.
Disappointed in a 7-game Stanley Cup series, dude?
4 of the games were blowouts. I love Game 7. Game 7 Stanley Cup Finals. There's nothing better in sports, in my opinion. But 4 of the games were not close. 4 of the games after the second period were basically, can a crazy miracle happen, and you're just sort of counting the seconds down. So, you know, from that perspective, it's actually about as bad as a 7-game series could be.
The blowouts were won by Boston.
That's right.
All of them. Dude, what happened to Vancouver here? What's your diagnosis?
It is really tough to say. I mean, after the Mavericks winning the NBA Finals, see, I know something about another sport,
nice,
dude.
Nice, dude. Nice.
It seems very easy to make a LeBron Sedin's comparison here. They basically did not, it seemed like they didn't show up. We saw some scary possessions in the San Jose series with the Sedins and Burrows passing the puck back and forth with incredible amount of zone time. And you sense that inevitability of a goal, or at least a great scoring chance. And there was none of that tonight. And I don't know if it's defense. I don't know. In a way, it seems like Boston, you know, I hate to go back to the cliche, but it's will versus skill, and Boston clearly had more will. It's just that simple. I don't think anybody would dispute that Vancouver had more skill, but I don't remember any of those guys willing to just crush somebody other than, you know, Aaron Rome and Christopher Higgins, who, you know, clocked Zdeno Chara tonight. But from the top lines, there wasn't that. It didn't seem like there was much desire to really gut it out, because you put Daniel Sedin in with Seidenberg in the corner. Seidenberg's a good defenseman, but my money's on Sedin coming out with the puck most of the time. And I did not see those kind of one-on-one battles in tough areas of the ice very much in any of these games. It seems like Vancouver sort of just gave up those areas and looked for, I don't know, pretty plays or something. I don't know. Am I off base here? What's your diagnosis?
Well, I think you're actually right on target, and it was a matter of, you know, the Bruins defense. They found a way over the long haul of the series to completely negate the Sedins. They were out of it.
Right.
You know, completely out of it, none factor. And I'm sure Canucks fans will be crying, we didn't have Ham Hughes. We didn't have Raymond.
Right.
We didn't have Rome. We didn't have the ghost of Keith Ballard.
And,
you know,
and Kessler was obviously injured, obviously not 100%.
Right. He was banged up from our series.
That's right.
We saw it happen in Game 5 when he came up lame, and he's been trying to gut out whatever that injury is. We'll find out this week. Yeah, but Boston had their fair share of bang-ups, too. I mean, they lost arguably their best forward, Nathan Horton. They didn't have Savard the entire playoffs.
Right.
You imagine what having Savard made them better or worse, you know?
It's hard to say.
It's hard to say, you know. But Boston overcame it in the end, dude, and it all falls on the shoulders of Tim Thomas, really. I mean, that guy is just
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. To rewind back to last summer where they basically couldn't give him away.
Yeah.
Right. You know, they were trying to trade him, and, you know, what a mistake that would have been. You look at this Bruins team, dude. Let me remind you and the listeners that this Boston Bruins team in the playoffs, they lost the first game of a series three times. They lost the first two games twice, and they played seven games three times.
That's crazy.
That's insane. And then in the other series against Philly,
they
swept them. You know, so you look at it's a perfect example of, as a fan of a team, you never push the panic button too early because anything can happen in the playoffs.
That's right.
I think us and a lot of people, when Boston fell behind Montreal 2-0, they left them for dead.
Yeah.
For dead. This is it. It's over. And that team that was hung out to dry that early ends up winning the Stanley Cup. It's amazing. What a great story.
It is. And I might go back to something I think we talked about either last week or the week before, where people, I think the question was, do you really load up and go for the cup? And I said, no, because it can come down to small things. And I think we saw that with Vancouver. We saw their best defenseman, Dan Ham Hughes, get knocked out. We saw Raymond get knocked out. We saw the Sedins just disappear. It can come down to crazy bounces, individual performances, bad injuries at the wrong time. Kessler is banged up. And look what's probably going to happen to Vancouver. They could easily be Chicago next year. They could lose two top defensemen and some other players, and they could easily sink down to the middle part of the Western Conference and not be nearly as dominant as they were this year. And all of a sudden, they've gone from, you know, hero to zero, not necessarily to zero, but hero to, you know, 2.5 or something.
Yeah, that's my question for you, dude, is, you know, as I think we found ourselves rooting for the Bruins during this series.
Yeah.
But as they won tonight, and as I watched them passing around the cup, and it was the camera, unfortunately, I felt bad, and then I chuckled a little when I saw Ryan Kessler sobbing.
just a little.
I know. But I'm sure I felt bad, and I thought actually the fans in the arena were pretty classy.
Absolutely. I thought that too.
About, you know, cheering on their team at the end. I would hope that we would be the same way, but I'm sure we would be just devastated.
Yes.
Game 7, watching your team just get shelled on your ice, just got to be brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Is Boston winning the cup just is that the worst thing that could have happened for San Jose? Because now, you know, Vancouver is going to be highly motivated to return a lot, as much of this product as possible. Instead of, if they had won, they might have been more likely to just let some of these guys go.
I don't really.
Is this bad?
I don't really think about it like that. I don't think it really matters much. If anything, it's going to put more pressure on Vancouver. It's going to further. Actually, it might take some pressure off the Sharks, because now Vancouver can be the poster child for the playoff choke job. I mean, they were up 2-0 with home ice advantage in the Stanley Cup Finals, and they couldn't win.
That's true.
And they got blown out bad in several games. So Luongo might be, you know, the poster child of the poster team.
Shut your mouth. You know what I'm saying? This guy, you know, a few days ago before game 6 is calling out Tim Thomas for his style of play.
See, I think that was blown out of proportion. I didn't see it as a knock against Thomas. I thought he was just sort of contrasting their styles. He plays a really aggressive out of the net style. I don't, under that situation, I think I could make that save. It wasn't a knock against Thomas. I just think everybody blew it out of proportion.
Dude, you're not feeding into the drama. I'm gonna try it again.
Okay,
dude,
sorry.
You know, Luongo, shut your mouth.
Yeah, I mean, geez, God, this guy, just shut it. You're terrible. You got pulled out of 2 games, and now you're going to run your yap?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay,
that's the kind of sensationalism we're looking for on the podcast.
Sorry, dude.
I don't want rationality, dude. I just want pure rampant sensationalism.
Beg your pardon.
Vancouver has BX's Salo, Erhoff, your favorite guy, Jeff Tambellini, Rafi Torres, Chris Higgins. Those guys are all unrestricted. LaPierre and Hansen are restricted free agents. They're going to have about $16 million of cap room.
Mm-hmm.
But I could tell you that if they attempt to re-sign Salo, Bieksa, and Erhoff, that's probably about $13 million at least of that cap room. So you know, they're going to have some tough decisions to make. Throughout the offseason, it'll be interesting to see what happens with them, dude.
Yep. So, unfortunately, I rated it as a bit of a disappointing series, a bit of a disappointing Game 7. I was hoping to see some tension, some drama late in the game. It really just wasn't there. And it's too bad, but all the credit goes to the Boston Bruins. I picked them to come out of the East. I'll toot my own horn on that score, but... I never really expected them to beat Vancouver.
Yeah,
I thought
either.
Vancouver was
me
just
either.
Too strong, and I was wrong. I was wrong. I had that way wrong.
Kudos. Well, speaking of way wrong, let's talk about the San Jose Sharks. Oh, sorry. Bad segue. That was a terrible segue.
Ooh.
Oh, yes. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the defense and the goalies of the San Jose Sharks who mm-hmm. signed... Who's unrestricted, who's restricted, and who already has set sail into European pastures.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we should start there with the big news for the Sharks today is that Nick Vallin has signed to play overseas. He is definitely not coming back to San Jose, dude. We will start with the unrestricted free agents. Nick Vallin, gone. Opinions?
Well, I think that was more or less inevitable. I mean, didn't we say that we didn't really... I don't think either one of us wanted him back, certainly not anywhere near the salary that he was pulling down this past year. And I don't know. I wish him the best of luck in Sweden, and I hope he takes the advice.
Don't complain. Just work hard.
At $2.65 million cap hit this year for a guy who, you know, is playing 14 minutes...
And not a lot of offense.
Yeah, solid guy, good third pairing guy.
Right.
Just you see the climate of the league and how you can get guys like that in August for $600,000. You know, I'm sure if we ran the numbers and you compare his season against Andres Lilja, who, you know, was in camp and then ended up signing a one-year deal with the Ducks for like... $700,000.
Right.
It's probably pretty comparable.
Yeah.
You know?
It's probably fairly close.
Probably fairly close. I mean, maybe Vallin had a little bit of a better year. I mean, I don't know. I'm just talking off the top of my head, but I don't think this is a bad thing. I think this money should be spent in other ways to upgrade this team. And good luck to Hamburgers. We're going to miss talking about Hamburgers, dude.
We are.
Hamburgers.
I have a feeling that sound effect will stay in the rotation.
Well, I don't know. I may have to get pulled out a little bit. But yeah, of course, we wish him the best. And I don't think either of us had him on the must-keep list in the off season. So I guess that makes it a little bit easier. And I guess let's move on.
Yeah,
to...
let's move right on to someone who's, and I think both of us agree, is an absolute must-keep, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Ken Huskins.
Yeah, absolutely. Must keep.
Ken Huskins, the disappointing signing of two off seasons ago on July 1st. We were all ramped up. We were doing a live recorded podcast, dude. This is back in the younger days.
Yes.
And then
I remember
it comes across
well.
the internet wires that Kent Huskins has signed. I was all excited. I thought maybe we had signed some big ticket free agent. As we know, that never happens, and it's Kent Huskins.
Right.
At a bloated $1.7 million, dude.
And you were very disappointed.
I was, but not as disappointed as I was when I actually saw him out on the ice. Kent Huskins coming back to San Jose or not?
I can't imagine him coming back unless he's making league minimum kind of money.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who couldn't make the lineup in the playoffs. So,
well,
I don't know why.
He ended up playing, though, you know, in the conference finals, but
right.
because of an injury.
Right, right. So I can't see him on this team. The door is open for kids in Worcester, free agents. Justin Braun clearly on that list, right? Seems to be at the top of the list at the moment. Played lots of games in the regular season, so. Yeah.
Well, let me say this, dude, and I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit here. You know, it seems like with Vallin leaving, I have it on decent authority that Mares and Nickel are potentially not sticking around.
Right.
You know, in town, so. If we're kind of having a cleaning out here of some of the role players, you would imagine Ken Huskins would be at the top of that list.
I would think.
If he's looking to kind of recharge that part of the team, you know, Mares and Nichols are both, you know, looking to leave town. Vallin is gone already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ken Huskins, you know, should we do a drive-by and see if his house is for sale? You know, that might be a good way to tell. But the only way he's still here is if he's making the minimum. And I still think you could probably find a guy who can be better than that.
I think so.
And Justin Braun, you'd rather see him out there. So Ken Huskins, we're going to say hopefully not, right?
Yeah, not available, not staying around.
Mr. Ian White.
Well, that's the big question of the offseason for the Sharks, clearly. I think that's the biggest question, even bigger than Setoguchi, because Setoguchi is still restricted. There's no scenario I can imagine where the Sharks wouldn't extend Setoguchi a qualifying offer, so
right.
he's at least going to have the opportunity to stay. There might be some drama associated with an offer sheet, but that hasn't happened very much in the last couple of seasons, so... I think Setoguchi's probably going to stick around or the Sharks are going to get some compensation. But the big question is Ian White. Got him at the deadline. I think he at least met expectations for me. I think...
Absolutely.
And you're nodding your head. So, you know, Ian White certainly looked good in the playoffs. Ian White is an unrestricted free agent and he might very well be targeted by some teams like the Detroit Red Wings that need D. So the question is, are the Sharks going to be able to lock him up before free agency opens? What kind of money are we talking about? And what's the right price? What's a good price? And what's too much to pay for Ian White?
Well, by all accounts, it seems like from the role he played this year and the role he's played just in general, is he's never going to be a top pairing guy. And he maybe is a questionable second pairing guy. You know, Ian White was extremely effective in a third pairing role for the Sharks.
Right.
He did really well. Can he play that second pairing type of minutes? I feel like he can.
Right.
You know, would the Sharks be better served to try and improve on that in another way? I don't know. There's some really interesting names out there in terms of unrestricted free agency, but, you know, can the Sharks really land a big fish
right.
on July 1st? They never have been
it's
able to do
it. Never happened.
So are they better served trying to lock up Ian White beforehand? Yeah.
I think so.
Probably. Otherwise, you're left sitting with nothing. Did his price go up too much because he played so well in the playoffs?
I think it's going to be more... His salary next year is going to be more of a function of the market than a function of his play, in my opinion. He's making around $3 million. Maybe his stock went up a little bit because of his playoff performance. He certainly looked good, certainly didn't look out of his element and played well. But I think the fact that there just aren't that many great names on the market is going to be more of a factor as to what he gets paid and how many years and all that kind of stuff.
Well, he's going to sit behind Pikkanen, Erhoff, and Saulo, and Bieksa.
Yeah.
And there's another big, Markov.
Cabrillet?
Cabrillet. You know, he's going to fall in behind that A tier.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably behind James Wisniewski, too. Definitely
behind, you know, James Wisniewski.
So, you know, for White, you know, those guys all are going to be in the $4 million and higher range.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a reasonable price tag for Ian White, 3.3. Would you say giving him a $300,000 raise and trying to lock him up for a couple years, is that, you know, let's say 3 years,
$10 million.
Yeah, 3 years, $10 million.
I could live with that price, but I don't know what the market is going to bear here. We don't know how, you know, you see sometimes these guys get blown up. Jeff Finger making $3 million.
Sure.
So, you know, could this be one of those years?
He could definitely make more money from another team.
I think
there's
that's true.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, Florida,
he could
be one of Florida's top three defensemen, and probably they'd pay him $4 million.
He could go all Ron Hainsey on us.
Sure. Sure. I mean, he could. Ron Hainsey,
yeah,
you know, is making way too much money for the type of player that he is. He's making like $4.5 million or something.
Right.
You know, but he was a direct benefit of a really weak market, I think, that year.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. he took advantage. Now, in terms of defensemen, I mean, there's some good company out there. So I hope the Sharks keep Ian White. I hope that he recognizes the chance to win here. But it wouldn't be shocking if it gets to July 1st and we don't have him signed, dude. I think he's gone.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, dude. I think you're right. And as much as people say the Sharks should go out and really get that number two, go out and get Pitkinen, go out and get Bieksa, go out and get Cabrillet. Let's really try to look at this realistically here, and we'll of course talk more as, you know, free agency gets nearer and nearer. That's never been the Shark style. It's never really happened. The biggest free agent they signed in the last 10 years is Mike Greer.
Well, I don't know. I think you can make the argument now that the biggest free agent they've signed was Antti Niemi.
That's true.
But that came very late,
yes.
And it came as a total steal, you know, in the moment.
It wasn't the Sharks bidding up the price with other teams in the running. It wasn't one of those situations. It was the Sharks basically picking up the dregs and saying, if you're not going to take them, we'll take them. Why not? We'll take them.
But this is a situation, and we've talked about this before, dude, is I don't think it's that Doug Wilson isn't in the mix. I think that there's a limit to how high he's willing to go.
Right.
And also, you know, free agent guys are maybe less interested in coming out west.
Right.
You know, we heard that the Sharks were in on Hamhuis. We've heard that all the way back to the Sharks were in on Niedermeyer twice.
Right.
That they were in on Chara.
Right.
Back when he was leaving Ottawa. That they were in on Wade Redden, you know.
Yeah.
That the Sharks have been in on some of these big ticket defensemen in the past.
Right.
We heard, and I wrote about this, that the Sharks were in on Chris Drury.
Right.
Back when he was leaving Buffalo mm-hmm. to go play in New York. So Doug Wilson's going to kick the tires, but it would be shocking.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I think we should hope that Ian White finds a contract resolution. Restricted
right.
free agents, dude, there are none in terms of defensemen on the that played an NHL game.
Right. And Demers, Murray, Vlasic, and Boyle, we really don't see a change here.
No, I think, you know, all of these guys are going to be part of the team, and they're all very important to the team.
Part of the D discussion, one thing that I found really interesting, I was looking at some Bruins statistics here, and as you know, and as we've talked about several times in the podcast, a lot of times the league will copy the manner in which the Stanley Cup champion is built, and
right.
we saw a lot of teams go with cheap goaltending last year because the Flyers did it and Chicago did it, and we saw, you know, other puck possession players and Big D. If we look at Boston, Boston has one stellar defenseman with Zdeno Chara, who had 44 points in the regular season, which is an excellent output, not league leading, but a very good output with 14 goals. Dennis Seidenberg had 32 points, 7 goals. And then we're getting down to guys with not a whole lot of points. Johnny Boychuk, 16 points. Ferentz, 15 points. Adam McQuaid, 15 points. Steve Kampfer, 10 points. Caberle, only played 24 games, 9 points. So he's probably up there, but I wouldn't say Caberle was much of a factor in the playoffs. I think he had one goal, and it was in Game 6 of the Vancouver series.
No,
so
it's not really.
It's not like Caberle was tearing it up. I mean, Johnny Boychuk was a bigger factor, I believe, in the series than Thomas Caberle. So could we see is this a recognition or somehow validating the way the Sharks have gone here with maybe one sort of top defenseman and then some, hopefully, crossing my fingers, some good supporting players that can play smart and chip in when needed, and that's enough, right? We don't need to go out and get like all the top offensive defensemen. I don't know. I mean,
I think it's an issue of style, and we don't play the same style that Boston does.
True.
But Boston, they have an elite goaltender, a guy who's going to win his second Vezina.
Yes.
And who's, you know, the Conn Smythe winner. You know, he's just a superstar goalie.
Right.
And, you know, Antti Niemi is not that guy. So you have to have better defensemen in front of him. And the Sharks need to have mobile defensemen. And, you know, Boston seemed to get away with having Chara and then a bunch of guys who are going to bleed on the ice and maybe not be stars in their own right.
Good players all, great players none.
Right. Right.
I mean, none of these guys is going to be Dragon. None of these guys is a guy that you look at and say, that guy should not be in the NHL.
Right.
Certainly a guy like Adam McQuaid, who I didn't really know much about before this season, he certainly impressed me in the finals. I mean, this is a young kid who really had a lot of poise in the playoffs, and maybe he didn't play a ton of minutes, but he played 14:52 in the regular season. So, yeah, they're building on just solid players. Right. They could use a Nick Vallin. Like it seems like that's sort of what they're looking at. The guy, not a lot of points, but doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Throw him in there and just gut it out and go let Brad Marchand like stick somebody and make them mad. You know, something like that.
Let me ask you about Justin Braun, who also is under contract. Dude, do you feel like this is a guy who's ready to play? I mean, I know we've only seen him play a handful of games, but, you know, do you feel like he's ready for a full-time role on this team, or is the jury kind of still out?
Jury's definitely out. I don't think anybody knows for sure if this guy's ready or not. We saw him play very well in a few games. We saw him play not so well in other games. We saw him get benched.
What does it say that they picked Huskins over him when, like, the Canucks are picking Tanev over Ballard?
It says you go with what you know over what you don't know. You go with the known commodity versus
Vancouver didn't do that.
Well, they went with Tanev, who was known a steady guy, and Ballard's been terrible.
Right, but they went. I guess I'm saying they went with the rookie over the veteran, and you know.
But with Tanev, at least from my perspective, and maybe a Vancouver fan or a person who watches Vancouver much more closely would disagree with me. But it seemed like Tanev, you knew what you were getting with Tanev.
Right.
And Ballard was the guy who was going to cough it up at his own blue line and give up a breakaway.
Maybe clobber his goalie.
Yeah, hit his goalie in the head with his stick. And Tanev wasn't that guy. Tanev, you knew what you were getting. He's going to go play 12 minutes or 8 minutes or whatever it was, and he's going to go out there and make simple plays, and then he's not going to be a guy you're going to look at and go, ooh, you know? Ooh, you know, but...
I'm wondering if the Sharks and their evaluation of Justin Braun... That's definitely going to impact whether they're going to sign Ian White, because they seem to be duplicate parts. A very mobile defenseman who can get a shot through.
Not very big, not punishing.
Right.
And, you know, makes his money off of moving the puck around well.
Difficult to imagine that they will both be regular players next year. Difficult to see that scenario.
Right. This is just a shot in the dark, and I have no idea if he's ready or not, but Nick Petrecki would seem to fit a more needed role than Justin Braun at this point, Nick Petrecki plays the way we hope he can play.
Right. Nick Petrecki, that would seem to be a big if and a big long shot at this point. They seem to be pretty content on letting him marinate in the minors. He had a better year this year. I think they're looking for him to have a a standout year. Going back to that Ryan Clough pattern that we talked about last week with Brandon Mashinter,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they really want to, maybe next year, you want to see Patrecki play that number one defenseman role or number two defenseman role,
mm-hmm.
that sidekick to. That's why I don't think it would be so bad for Worcester if Braun and Patrecki were the top pairing down there,
mm-hmm.
and then you get a little glimpse at what maybe could be a nice future combo, and you keep Ian White and you bring in someone else to play that role. We've talked about, you know, Murray being cast as Boyle's line mate. That's a bit of the topic for the summer, dude. I think we got an email to this effect.
We got an email not about Murray, but about somebody else, and this is sort of similar. This is from Eric, and he says, I have to disagree with your sentiment from the previous show that Pavelski is miscast as a third-line center. While I agree with the sentiment that he's not a true checking-line center, I think it's absurd to take one of our strengths and manipulate it into a weakness. We are incredibly lucky to have a center of Pavelski's ability on our third line. Moreover, it's a benefit that the shoot-first center on the third line, as the third line does not typically have shooters to feed. Also, McClellan matches strength to strength, so Pavelski didn't even have the opportunity to shut down the top line, nor would I expect any other third-line center to have the opportunity. Dave Bullen will be great, but what available players are you even talking about? Let's just say I don't think our depth at center was the reason the Sharks lost this time around. All good points. It's a good email. It makes a great point. I don't think we were turning Pavelski into a weakness.
No.
That's not really what we were saying.
Not the intent.
It's sort of, I think what we were saying is we had, you know, if we're making a cake where you got too much of one ingredient and not enough of another ingredient is what we were saying. And, you know, certainly we've talked a lot about D the last couple of years. and if you have a lot of centers and the Sharks have a ton of centers, is it great to have a big hole at the number two D and maybe the number three D spot and have a great third line center? I don't know if I would make that trade necessarily, right? So that's what we meant by miscast. Not that the Sharks are weaker because of Pavelski, but they might be weaker because of what they could have instead of Pavelski, perhaps, or instead of somebody else.
Right. It's more that question of, you know, Pavelski and Setoguchi both being on the team next year, and could Couture slide to wing?
Right.
I mean, the best line really would be Clough, Pavelski, and Couture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Seto is the odd guy out.
Right.
But when you're looking at price and you're looking at value, you know, the Sharks' potential best trade chip, as much as we love him, is Joe Pavelski. It might be. I mean, you could get something really spectacular for him. You know, you wouldn't trade him for, you know, the 24th pick and, you know, the rights to Pat White. You know, I mean,
right.
And then you throw in Brad Lukowich. You know, you're not going to give him away.
Right.
But if you could get something that could make this team even better,
mm-hmm.
and then bring in, and his point is great, Eric's point. But what type of player are we even talking about to fill the role?
Right.
I don't have that answer. You know, I like Brooks Like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at free agents.
I wouldn't say
it's super thin with guys Eric Belanger, Corey Stillman, Pascal Dupuis, Antti Miettinen would be a great fit. Marty Riesner, more of a fourth liner. Scotty Upshaw, not a bad choice. Jamie Langenbrunner. I mean, there's guys out there that could fit this sort of third line
also,
role.
And I'm going to throw out another name that, you know, the Sharks are very familiar with, and maybe his time has kind of run his course in Columbus, is, you know, Sammy Paulson's still in the league, and he's not that old.
Right.
You know, and we remember what a pain in the ass he is.
Right.
I mean, he's not an agitator, mm-hmm. but he is really, I'm not really in that sense of like a Marchand.
No.
But he is so good defensively and just one of the best faceoff guys in the league, and kind of, you know, dying a slow, painful death in Columbus.
Right.
You know, maybe there's a way to get a guy like that.
Jason Arnett?
Yeah,
I would take Jason Arnett.
There are players out there that maybe, if you look at the teams that made the Stanley Cup Finals, if you're looking to do a little bit of copying,
mm-hmm.
you look at what they've got and you go, gosh, you know, this didn't work. I mean, it didn't work. I mean, maybe Pavelski's not the reason why we didn't win.
No, certainly not.
But it didn't work either.
Right.
We lost in five games.
Right.
So something just something needs to be.
Are we a little too heavy on the starboard side of the boat rather than the port side? That's all we're saying, Eric, and we appreciate the email.
Shall we move to another forward, dude? We got another email, or I think we got some comments about this.
What's that?
About Vili Lano.
Oh,
this
Vili
was
Lano.
A hot topic on the message board or on Dudes on Hockey in the comment thread.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Tom talking about Vili Lano and how he looks like he might be a definite casualty out in Philadelphia, that now that they have the rights to Brizgalov and they've assured Jeff Carter, which I'm sure he's really sleeping well about that assurance,
yeah,
that he's not the one going anywhere.
Sure.
So,
right.
But doesn't look like they have the money to keep Vili Lano. Are the Sharks interested in Vili Lano? Could he help this team?
Maybe. I don't know if I would put him at the top of my list. Vili Lano is an enigma wrapped in a mystery, or whatever the phrase
conundrum.
Is.
Conundrum.
Yeah, exactly. Looks great sometimes, looks terrible other times. Do the Sharks want a guy like that? I'm not so sure.
Well, I think we have a guy like that. His name's Devin Zitagucci. I mean, aren't they the same player? You don't want both those guys around, right?
Yeah.
Vili Lano has some great moments, and he had a great playoff run 2 years ago when the Flyers went to the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, I think he set the record for the most playoff points by a rookie in the playoffs, right? I think so, dude.
Okay.
I'm going to look it up. But, you know, he had a really great run, but he didn't even start.
Was that for the Flyers? I mean, yeah, didn't he come from Detroit?
Yeah, it was for the Flyers, dude. Okay. I'm here. I'm gonna make it known. Let's see.
Yeah, dude.
Lano started the Stanley Cup playoffs in the press box, but injuries to Gagne and Carter, he got called into action. 7 goals and 14 assists, 21 points in 19 games. This tied the rookie record for most points in the Stanley Cup playoffs held by Dino Cicerelli.
Hmm.
So that was in the 2010 playoffs. So, I mean, this guy only has, he played 13 games in 2008, 42 games for Detroit in 2009. I think we're remembering him because he was part of Detroit's playoff team in 2008, 2009.
Right.
So, he really only has 3 NHL seasons under his belt.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, with a 53-point season last year, he's in line for a pretty good payday here.
I think so.
Right?
Yeah.
And probably someone's going to give him $3.5 million at least, right?
That sounds about right.
Yeah,
Maybe not quite that, but $3 million certainly sounds right.
I don't know. I guess, Tom, I'm wondering, like, where would you see him? This would definitely mean the Sharks would be sticking with the same formula of, you know, playing a scoring third line,
mm-hmm.
you know, which worked well in stretches in the playoffs, but in the end, it didn't work.
No.
So I guess I'm saying I want a little more LaPierre and Torres and a little less Lano, a little less Lano in your life, a little.
Oh God, don't sing that song.
Sorry, I mean, you look at the guys, you know, Campbell, Thornton, Marchand, LaPierre, Torres,
right,
Higgins. I mean, these are the guys who are very quietly effective, right, in the Stanley Cup Finals, and I think someone's going to give Lano money that we can't match, and we should really, we're going to spend $3.5 million. I'd rather Doug Wilson be on the phone offering it to James Wisniewski.
Yeah.
Than Vili Lano, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that's not the need right now. That's a good question, Tom. We'll be mulling that, and I'd be interested to see what, in fact, he gets and where he gets it when it goes, and if that 3 to 3.5 area is, in fact, what he ends up getting. Because we've seen, you know, you see some crazy stuff. Guys get way too much. They sort of fall through the cracks. And speaking of falling through the cracks, one was Antti Niemi. We haven't talked so much about goaltenders. He signed up so for several years now. And it looks like Andro Nidimäki is also signed up for next year. So could we see any movement with these two guys? Is this, we got a real logjam here with goalies,
don't we? Yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if Nidimäki is moved if they can. I mean, I don't know.
It's going to be tough.
I think it's a $2 million contract,
mm-hmm.
which isn't unmovable, but for a guy who didn't exactly prove that he was worth it and basically, you know, lost the battle to Niemi to be the number one guy, you know, we're likely stuck with it. Mm-hmm. Although we've seen weirder things happen, and there are some teams like Phoenix, you know, they're definitely going to be trolling for a goalie on the cheap.
Well, they got LaBarbera.
So So they're going to be looking for a guy. I mean, that might be a possibility.
Here's a question. I know I read on some other blogs, a lot of people have been looking on CapGeek about the possible buyout of Danny Heatley, which we've already addressed. I mean, could Ninomaki be bought out?
No. I don't think so.
You don't think so? I mean, it wouldn't be a lot of money. It'd be $500,000 or $600,000 cap hit over a couple of years or something.
Yeah.
Get out from under a little bit, maybe.
I guess. I mean, maybe if they felt like... I mean, the question after that is really, well, then who's the backup, right? I mean, Alex Stalock is a restricted free agent. Carter Hutton is a restricted free agent. We saw Hutton in San Jose probably for about 2 months. He looked fantastic taking notes on the bench. He didn't didn't play a single minute of NHL hockey. And, you know, it appeared at the end last year that they were giving all his time to Harry Sateri down in Worcester, and that they should, because Harry Sateri, you know, is one of more highly thought of, you know, goalie prospects, certainly in the Sharks system. Well, Stalock is a definite keeper, right?
Well, he had a really, really bad injury at the end of last season and got a nerve cut in the back of his leg. So that's a really bad scene. I don't know what you need to do to come back from something like that.
But you tender him, right?
Of course. Yeah. Of course, without question.
You tender him.
But
Hutton.
I'm going to go out a little bit on a limb here and say it's not out of the question for the Sharks to buy out Ninomaki, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think they could use some of the cap room, and they have so many guys in Worcester. You could do a platoon situation at backup if you have to. I don't think that's a... I mean, like, yeah, Tuukka Rask really got a lot of minutes. And, I mean, that guy is a huge prospect. I think Boston gave up Andrew Raycroft for him when Andrew Raycroft won the Calder or something, right? They gave up a lot to get Tuukka Rask, who is a good goalie. And he didn't do squat, you know, because he didn't play because they had Thomas. So... maybe we might go flip the other side. Instead of saying the Sharks need to have two strong goalies, well, we already have our number one signed up for several years. Why do we need to pay $2 million for a backup?
Well, let me just give you the numbers here. If the Sharks do decide to buy out Ontario Ninomaki, the cap hit over two seasons would be $666,000.
Right.
So, you know, they would be saving about $1.3 million of cap space. If they felt like they had someone... either Stalock, Sateri, Thomas Greiss, you know, poor guy. You know, I think, you know, most likely Thomas Greiss is out of the equation here. But you've got, you're really, the only known quantity you have, right, is Harry Sateri, right? I mean, because Tyson Sexsmith.
Is he known? How known is Harry Sateri?
Well, I mean, you know, he played at least some games in the American Hockey League, and Sexsmith did not play well. You know, in the American Hockey League, and Stalock has a major leg injury.
Right.
So, for those reasons, you know, I think the Sharks probably won't buy out Ontario Ninomaki because they'll be pretty nervous about it.
All right, dude. We're getting up there in time again, of course.
Come on, dude. I want another 50 minutes. People love it.
Okay, so this is an email from a person that I don't know their real name. So on the blog, they were called Evil Doug sometimes, other names other times. So quick email. Said, hey, dudes, I won the regular season of the Fantasy League I was in, but not the playoffs. And since this is a Sharks podcast, it seems pretty fitting I come on for that. So he goes on to justify coming on the show based on his regular season win. And he says, I think I had the best team during the season. In the last 3 weeks of the season, it's just a run, and it should be the best team over the duration of the season. So as a result, I did not win the league, but I should come on the show anyway, or I'd probably come on the show anyway if you two wanted me to. I'm sure it will be an interesting podcast, lots of intrigue and all that. Well, that's a tempting offer, but we're going to have to pass on that one. So, but we do definitely extend the invitation. We got one response so far out of
That's right. I
so you guys got this is not unlimited offer. You got till the end of the month to respond to us if you want to come on. We got Patrick coming on at some point. We need to schedule Patrick. There are two other winners. Collect your prize if
I
you
suggest
want to.
That they
if you're man enough to or woman enough to collect the prize,
go to Michael's and get a nice piece of butcher paper and maybe a felt tip marker and make a nice little dudes on hockey banner that you can hang. You could call yourself the regular season champion and it'll be just like you're at the tank and you can hang it in your room and hopefully your parents won't tell you to take it down.
That's true. It's all good ideas, dude. I never thought of it like that.
I'm definitely going to plan on doing that.
Okay, sounds good. Let's see. I think that's it for the emails this week. Yeah. So anyway, questions at dudesonhockey.com, of course, is the email address. And we are still going to be broadcasting throughout the off season.
Yeah, next week we're going to be looking at the draft. You know, we've got the draft next Friday. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy the draft. You know, there's a couple of theories, you know, to bounce about, and we can maybe have a better idea in terms of the Sharks re-signing some guys by then, other players that will already have been re-signed. As you know, the draft day is a big day for trades too. So
that's right. There's always some fun, and we always watch the draft and are disappointed. So I'm looking forward to that again this year.
Because it wouldn't be a year-round disappointment without the draft. And then July 1st. I don't know why I get excited for the summer every year for hockey. And then just it's always just a little bit disappointing.
It's the definition of insanity. It's the same situation, and we expect a different result every time. And I'm gonna get all excited. I can tell.
No.
I can already tell I'm going to get all excited again this year.
Oh, of course, dude. Yeah. Of course. And one day it will pay off, but it probably won't be when we're alive.
One magical day.
Oh,
all right, dude. Boy. Well, I think that's it.
Another 46 minutes, dude.
Yeah. Well, via con Dios to Nicholas Wallin. We wish him the best. And,
absolutely.
Hopefully welcome and... hello to Ian White sometime in the near future. And of course, we'll be back again next week on the podcast.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.